You can demonstrate the importance of migration in Oregon's history with just two words, Oregon Trail. That mass in-migration of people from the eastern United States in the middle of the 19th century had a lot to do with making Oregon the place it is today. It was also not the only migration in Oregon's history, not by a long shot. The movement of people in and through Oregon is a recurring theme, as is a set of efforts to block some people from migrating, or at least to keep them from staying. Migration is the focus of a symposium at the University of Oregon this week, with events free and open to the public tonight in Eugene. We have the co-organizers on the line with us. Bob Bussell is a history professor at the University of Oregon. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
And we also have Eliza Canty Jones with us. She is the Director of Community Engagement at the Oregon Historical Society and editor of the Oregon Historical Quarterly. Hi, Eliza.
Good morning.
Good to have you both here. So, Bob, let's start with you. Give us a sense of Oregon and migration. Is it more a part of our history than it is for some other states?
Well, it's certainly an integral part of our history. And, again, the internal migration that you mentioned, certainly if you trace many Oregonians, you'll find people that came to parts of the Midwest or the Southwest, other parts of the country, first from other lands, and then eventually their final destination was Oregon. And then, of course, we have a long history and often one that was quite troubled as far as immigrants from Asia, particularly Chinese and Japanese immigrants. Quite a few people from Northern and Central Europe, Scandinavian immigrants who came to the state, and then also a long history with people from Latin American and Central American countries, which is what we've heard about, you know, most recently. And then, of course, a large refugee population, certainly in the Portland area. Portland has large numbers of people who were refugees from Eastern Europe and then in the post-Vietnam War era from Indochina. And then more recently, African refugees from African countries. So we really have become, particularly over the last three or four decades, a much more multiracial, multiethnic state, but that has longer and deeper roots as well.
Is it prehistoric as well, Bob? I mean, are we talking about the movements of people across the Bering Land Bridge? I mean, do you take that into the migration story as well?
Right, absolutely, absolutely. So given our geographic location, that's certainly part of the story as well, and that will, in fact, be part of some of the presentations at the symposium.
Eliza, I'm just wondering about the availability of records on migrations, particularly from the 19th century when some people came here and thought it was their right to be here and then turned around and looked at other people coming in and said, no, you can't be here. And I wonder how detailed any records might be of what happened to people in that time.
Oh, there's some really extremely detailed records. I mean, beginning with, of course, the oral traditions that indigenous peoples in Oregon have held and continue to share. And then also there are amazing records from the folks who are not indigenous to here who did explorations from sea, from land, obviously the Lewis and Clark expeditions. Those records have been tremendously valuable on the Oregon Trail diaries that people kept. And then also when the federal government instituted the Chinese Exclusion Act in the late 19th century, that ironically, not the intention at all, but that produced a vast set of records about Chinese folks who were coming to Oregon and other places in the United States and coming and going. There were a lot of restrictions on movement for folks. And so those records that are in the National Archives have been of enormous value to researchers and to family members as they've gone to look at that. So those are a few examples.
You mentioned the indigenous oral traditions. Are those about their own migration into the region thousands and thousands of years ago, or about the migrations of other people into the regions they already inhabited?
Well, you'll find that most indigenous people will tell you that they have always been here, that they are of this place. And so that's a thing that historians respect that understanding at this point in time. And I think the science and the history of how people may have come to be here is still open in a lot of ways. There are questions about, is the Bering Land Bridge the only way that may have happened, or is there travel by sea? But you'll find that the oral traditions have much more to do with the beginning of the people's existence in this place and on this landscape. And that's really important for us to understand as Oregonians and as historians.
I mean, the fact that the people who were here originally believe they are always from here.
That's exactly right. Yeah, the connection to the physical land is it is a challenging thing for those of us who don't have it to really understand, and so it requires a lot of listening to really understand that.
Eliza Canty Jones and Bob Bussell are our guests on the Jefferson Exchange, co-organizers of the Oregon Migrations Symposium going on in Eugene tonight and tomorrow. Bob is with the university. Eliza Canty Jones is with the Oregon Historical Society. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Maybe questions you have about people migrating into the state of Oregon through the years or some of the many exclusion laws we've already heard a bit about. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. For either of you, did any territory or state get as extreme as early Oregon did about barring some people like the black exclusion laws?
Well, I can speak to that a little bit. I think Oregon is a little bit of a special case because we are the only state to enter the Union with a constitution that excluded African Americans. So we banned slavery, but also excluded free African Americans. And that was when the Constitutional Convention sent the Constitution to the electorate, which of course are the white men at that time. This is 1857. There were three questions. Do you accept the Constitution? Shall we be free or slave? And shall we exclude or allow blacks in the state? And so the electorate made those three decisions together. Now, I have heard Dr. Daryl Milner, who is at Black Studies at PSU and a wonderful regional historian, tells a story that the only reason the exclusion didn't end up in the California Constitution is they were discussing it in the morning before lunch, went to lunch, had some drinks, and then just didn't take up the question afterward. So, you know, we are unique, but I don't think we are a total outlier.
So you're saying essentially the three martini lunch kept California from having an exclusion?
Yeah, and it's, you know, that's a whole other story, but the history of unfree labor and enslaved labor and in California is really wonderfully studied by Dr. Stacy Smith, who's at Oregon State University. So look her up.
All right. That sounds like some amazing stuff. Bob Bussell, the exclusion laws, I mean, how did they work? Was there a leave-by date sort of thing?
I think the federal law, I believe, was in the early 1880s, and, you know, essentially people that were here, there wasn't too much they could do about those, but it really was trying to keep people, you know, further people coming, you know, in from abroad. And, of course, there was quite a bit of tension between Chinese and Japanese who were in Oregon itself, and then you had, you know, later on you had the, you know, alien, quote-unquote alien land laws, the Oregon legislature, California, a number of other legislatures up and down the West Coast passed because there was concern from native-born landowners that didn't want to have competition, particularly from the Japanese, who were pretty successful in that regard. And then, of course, in terms of mining, where there were Chinese who were involved in mining, there were various types of laws passed to restrain them. So you see, it's almost akin in a way to Jim Crow and the apartheid South, that there were various types of laws passed in Oregon and elsewhere to really restrict the types of occupational mobility and economic options that were available to Chinese and then later on Japanese workers.
Do the laws of those times just generally say these people can't be here doing this, that sort of thing? Or is the rationale provided in there somewhere, too? I mean, do you get a sense from the statutes themselves about what the issues were that caused them to be on the books in the first place?
Well, I think that there was a strong sense, certainly, of white privilege, and that, again, you see in a lot of the literature of the period that these are workers that are, you know, that particularly, you know, Chinese and then also to some degree Japanese. These are people that are so different culturally, ethnically, that they can't, quote-unquote, be assimilated, that they drag down labor standards and job standards. So you have, you know, that you had the Working Men's Party in California that goes back into the, you know, 1870s, where there was a whole political movement, and there certainly are some echoes of this in our current politics, shall we say, as far as extreme types of restrictions, you know, boycotts of any types of goods that were made by people of Asian descent. So it really was, I think, this sense of just the otherness, cultural difference, the sense that these were people who had dragged down the standards of quote-unquote American working men at that time. And a lot of the law as well as custom and practice was designed to counter that.
We're talking about migration in Oregon's history, migration and exclusion, which seem to come hand in hand with it fairly often. Bob Bussell is a history professor at the University of Oregon. Eliza Canty Jones is the director of community engagement at the Oregon Historical Society. They are co-organizers of the Oregon Migration Symposium starting tonight in Eugene with some stuff open to the public. You can join us at 800-838-3760, and email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Eliza, Bob ran down some of the many people who have come to Oregon in groups over the years. Some of these might be a bit of a surprise. There's actually a bit of a gypsy history in Oregon, Roma people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will just mention that everything at the symposium is free and open to the public. So just everyone's invited. There's a lengthy Roma history in Oregon. And one of our presentations tomorrow morning by Carol Silverman, who's at the University of Oregon, will be talking about that. I think I just want to reflect a little bit on what Bob was saying about how and why these exclusion laws went into place. And it's extremely complicated, and it really does have to do with protection of whiteness and protection of maleness as being necessary access to economic rights and also to citizenship rights. And I think you see that in the long work that it took for women to get access to the vote and some of the ways that the rights around voting have been pushed up against over and over again, we see in our history. So, but as far as the groups who've come here, there are many, many, many. And I think what Bob mentioned earlier about over the past several decades, the immigrants and refugees who have come to Oregon and even further diversified the kinds of cultures and backgrounds and languages that we have spoken in this state, it's really exciting to see. And it's time for historians to begin understanding that and documenting it and using it to change the Oregon story that we know.
I wonder about any post-analysis of the effect of the exclusion laws, if the point was for white men to do better, whether in fact they did.
You know, I mean, better than what? You know, historians mm-hmm. are always careful to not argue a counterfactual. We can't say this would have happened had this other thing not happened, because we simply don't know. But I think that, you know, you'd have to look at some of the other data, but my understanding is that we don't see economic growth when other people are restricted. I should clarify also, there's often a misconception that the exclusion laws in Oregon, the African-American exclusion laws, stayed in place until the 1920s. That's when they were officially rescinded, but of course in the post-Civil War amendments to the U.S. Constitution that provided citizenship for everyone, those superseded the exclusion laws here in Oregon. But we still continue to have a very low population of African Americans. And what does that do to our economy? Does that really help people? Does it really give people more access? I would question that.
Okay. And Bob Bussell, I want to ask you about agricultural workers in Oregon, because I noticed that one of the sessions is about hops workers. I mean, there seems like there are a bunch of in-migrations of people to come work on crops for a very long time in Oregon.
Right. That certainly goes back well into the 19th century, and we're going to have some really interesting presentations on that. And, you know, Mario Cifuentes' presentation, I actually just heard him recently speaking about his new book, which is quite interesting. It goes back and talks about the Bracero program during World War II and farm workers coming in during that period. But there were even farm workers coming from Mexico and other places before that. So we see, Jeffrey, this pretty long historical arc. Sometimes I think we tend to get kind of presentist about things like agricultural labor, thinking it's a relatively recent phenomenon, but it goes back, you know, much, much farther than that. And I just wanted to add quickly in response to your question about immigrants and labor that, you know, immigrants come for many reasons, migrants and immigrants, but work usually and improving one's economic status and the status of one's family is a pretty powerful impulse. And then there's a long history of each immigrant group coming in. Usually there's some level of exploitation as far as immigrants being vulnerable, wanting to work, not knowing all the mores and customs language of the new country. And then, you know, and again, we have the most heterogeneous workforce in the world, or one of the most heterogeneous. So how you come away with some sense of, shall we say, working class solidarity amidst all this ethnic and racial difference has been an enduring theme for quite some time. And, you know, again, immigrants from Southern and Eastern Europe at the turn of the 20th century were often viewed as people that were unassimilable. You can't organize them. And often it's been found historically that immigrants, after, you know, considerable outreach and mobilizing and coming together with other folks, are among the staunchest types of people as far as standing up for their rights.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps even know more about the country in the sense that they have had to learn it from scratch rather than take it all for granted.
Yes.
You mentioned refugee populations, Bob, at the beginning. I mean, any idea how large the refugee population, the recent refugee population in Oregon is?
Yeah, I haven't looked at that data in a little bit, but one thing I can say, because we did a report, and it's a little bit old now, it goes back to about 2008 on the immigrant experience in Oregon, but one thing that people may not know is that the Eastern European population, people from, you know, particularly from the former Soviet Union countries under that orbit, I believe Portland was, you know, was one of the Metro Portland's one of the larger centers for refugees from those countries. And certainly as far as people, you know, the sizable numbers of people from Indochina and a growing number of folks from Africa, but particularly the Eastern European, Russian, Slavic group is really quite, is quite sizable in Metro Portland.
So migration, obviously a common stripe through Oregon history and a stripe that continues down the middle of the road today. Bob Bussell is a history professor at the University of Oregon. He and Eliza Canty Jones of the Oregon Historical Society are the co-organizers of the Oregon Migration Symposium starting tonight in Eugene. As you heard Eliza say, all events free and open to the public. Eliza and Bob, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Sure.
Thanks very much.
All right, take care.